In this week's update, the post-pandemic market recovery stalls, it's good money week, and politics takes centre stage here in the UK. The third quarter ended with a whimper last week. Of course, investors should not expect every three-month period to deliver positive returns, but the past 18 months since markets bottomed out during the early stages of the pandemic may have given us that impression. The summer and early autumn has provided a dose of reality. Looking at the various stock markets around the world, there's only been one bright spot really in Japan. And that was in response to 6 months of drift as that country bungled its response to COVID, hosted an unpopular Olympics, and fell out of love with its political leadership. A big rally in August and September as vaccinations picked up and a new prime minister emerged put the Japanese market at the top of the leaderboard in country terms, but Tokyo still only ended the quarter about 5% ahead of where it started. All the other developed markets spent the quarter going nowhere. The MSCI World Index, a measure of stocks globally, alongside the individual markets in the US, Europe and the UK, drifted higher through the summer but gave back gains in September and ended the quarter flat. The long list of things to worry about got longer last month, with inflation, supply chain concerns, rising energy prices, and potential monetary tightening topping the list. Against that backdrop, relatively high valuations and above average profit margins started to look a stretch. The worst part of the world in market terms has been Asia and other emerging markets. China has been a key factor here, with the government's clampdown on various sectors and more recently the Evergrande property company's troubles, prompting investors to question whether the long-term attractions of the world's second biggest economy justified its political, economic and financial risks. The CSI 300 index of stocks listed in Shanghai and Shenzhen fell nearly 10% in the quarter, and they are down around 15% since peaking in February. Same story for the broader emerging market index. Looking at the year to date, Bitcoin has once again topped the performance chart, followed by commodities and then large growth stocks and real estate. At the other end of the scale, government bonds have been the worst performer as investors have started to factor in rising inflation and potentially higher interest rates. A little unusually, given the focus on inflation, gold has also had a very poor year to date. Also down the bottom of the list are investment-grade bonds, hit by a combination of rising risk-free yields and a slightly wider spread as worries about corporate health grow. Emerging markets, both bonds and equity, have also had a bad year. Now, looking ahead into the fourth quarter, earnings season is just around the corner. Growth is expected to remain reasonably robust, but the rate of improvement is clearly ebbing away after the remarkable gains earlier in the year. This is precisely the time that markets often wobble, not when things are getting bad, but when they're not getting any better. Forecast year-on-year earnings growth in the third quarter is 28%. That's obviously good, but it compares with 54% in the first quarter and 96% in the second, both of which were significantly upgraded as those two earnings seasons progressed. It's hard to imagine a repeat of that in the next few weeks. I've talked before about the similarities with the summer of 2010, when expected earnings growth also peaked and the market took a while to adapt to the new reality. After the financial crisis, the wobble happened about a year into the recovery, which is why we were talking about it 3 or 4 months ago. This time it's been delayed a little, but the pattern is very similar. The good news is that the bearish impulse in the market might only be reflected in less ambitious valuation multiples and not in a significant fall in the market, as long as earnings continue to be delivered. That's why everyone is watching the earnings headwinds in the form of rising energy costs, wage inflation and margin compression so closely. It's a nervous moment, emphasising how difficult this autumnal period so often is in the markets. The US is obviously the most vulnerable to this reduction in valuations as it still trades at more than 20 times expected earnings. Markets like Japan, the UK and Europe are less exposed because they're cheaper. Some emerging markets and China also have a significant valuation advantage. As well as the pressure on margins, rising costs and wages, investors are also watching closely what happens with the Federal Reserve and other central banks in the next few weeks. The Fed has said that inflation is now high enough to trigger tighter policy. The second thing it's watching is the jobs market. So this Friday's non-farm payroll jobs data will be important. However, Chairman Jay Powell has pretty much indicated that he won't need a blockbuster jobs announcement to persuade him that the time has come to rein in stimulus. That looks nailed on for the November meeting. Assuming the Fed's $120 billion a month bond buying program is reduced by $15 billion a month, asset purchases will be ended by next summer, and that's when we should start to think about rising interest rates. Over here, rates may edge higher rather sooner. Some expect February to be the first hike, but they could conceivably come before the end of the year. Rising rates are most obviously a problem for bonds, less so in the initial stages for shares. So attention is unsurprisingly being focused on the traditional 60-40 portfolios, which have for so long been the go-to safety-first portfolio that financial advisors use for their clients. September delivered a 3.5% fall in a typical 60-40 portfolio, the worst decline in this kind of balanced portfolio since the 5% fall recorded in March 2020. Back then, bonds did their job of offsetting a bigger fall in shares. This time, however, both shares and bonds fell. That's a challenge for all investors. In the decade from 2010, the approach has delivered a 10.2% annual return, 15.3% last year. So far this year, the approach has delivered 8%, but with both shares and bonds relatively highly priced, the smooth ride that investors have learned to enjoy may not be sustainable. The challenge then is to know how to create a balanced portfolio in future. Assets like property, private equity, and hedge funds are a possible solution, but they tend to be less liquid, which brings a new set of problems. In a more challenging environment for investors, it will be interesting to see whether the recent enthusiasm for trying to do the right thing with our investments becomes less popular. This is a good week to answer that question, because here in the UK, it's Good Money Week, when the UK Sustainable Investment and Finance Association draws attention to its work and encourages us to look at our investments through an environmental, social and governance, or ESG, lens. This year, this is more than ever in focus as we head towards the COP26 Climate Summit in Glasgow next month. Even before that gets underway, a high-profile green summit is being staged in London, at which the bosses of Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, BlackRock, Blackstone and other globally important investors will gather with a focus on green technology and finance, including a push to kickstart the UK's early stage electric vehicle industry. In the meantime, there are a string of arguably more urgent issues for investors to get to grips with. Close to the top of the list is how the Evergrande saga resolves itself. The hugely indebted Chinese property company suspended trading in its shares this week as it moves towards a disposal of its property services subsidiary. The company is trying to unload assets in a bid to reduce the debt mountain that threatens its survival and which has cast a cloud over the whole Chinese real estate sector. Evergrande shares have lost 80% of their value so far this year, and its bonds are trading at a fraction of their face value. On the economic front, the main focus this week, other than the US jobs data on Friday, will be a string of purchasing managers' data for both manufacturing and services in Europe, the UK and the US. The inflation story will remain under the spotlight, especially in light of today's shocking 20% CPI reading in Turkey, where the government is resisting the higher interest rates the economy arguably needs. Closer to home, we have house price data from Halifax on Thursday. The corporate news is mainly on this side of the Atlantic as the US gears up for its third quarter earnings season. The highlight will be Tesco, the UK's largest supermarket chain. Elsewhere in the UK, it's all about politics, with the governing Conservative Party gathering for its autumn conference against a challenging backdrop of soaring energy bills, queues at petrol stations, the end of the furlough scheme, and potential shortages in the shops in the run-up to Christmas. It's the first in-person meeting for the Tories since they swept to power with an 80 majority in the 2019 election, just before the pandemic struck.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.